Now we shall read some of Sanatana Goswami's words. This is not only his understanding of the Bhagavatam, this is his realization. This is what he sees. He's opening up his heart and sharing that with us. And that is the most kind act from such a great soul. Because within the great soul's heart resides Krishna. And where Krishna is, Vrindavanam Pratyaja Padam Ekam Nagachati. Everyone else is there. All of Vrindavan is there. Here, Sanatana Goswami will describe the glories of peacocks. Actually, a verse from the Venugita, another verse from the 21st chapter of the 10th canto. O friend, this is the meditation of the gopis, and Sanatana Goswami, knowing their hearts, will expand that. O friend, Vrindavan is spreading the glories of the earth, having obtained the treasure of the lotus feet of the son of Devaki, meaning the son of Yasoda, meaning Krishna. The peacocks dance madly when they hear Govinda's flute, and upon seeing them, the peacocks from the hilltops, all other creatures become stunned. Seeing them do what? Dance in what way? Madly. Why were they dancing madly? Okay, I'll read it again. Please listen. O friend, the gopis are speaking to each other. Vrindavan is spreading the glories of the earth, having obtained the treasure of the lotus feet of Krishna, the son of Devaki. The peacocks dance madly when they hear Govinda's flute, and upon seeing them from the hilltops, other creatures all become stunned. A comment by Śrīla Sanatana Goswami. Only in Vrindavan does the Supreme Person appear as Govinda, the Lord of the cows, who delights in playing with the cows and cowherds, and he wears atop his head a peacock feather, and he wears gunja berries upon his head. He decorates himself with a garland of kadamba flowers and other forest ornaments, and in his hand he holds his constant friend, the flute. As soon as the peacocks in Vrindavan hear the murmuring of Govinda's flute, they conclude that a dark cloud is announcing the approach of rain. They hear the low rumbling of Krishna's flute. And they conclude that a dark cloud is announcing the approach of rain, and they begin to dance. And seeing the peacocks dancing, all the other living beings gathered in groups on the peaks of the hills stop whatever they are doing, and they just stand there stunned in ecstasy. Thus Vrindavan makes the earth more glorious than any other realm, even Vaikuntha. The word Venomanu, following the flute, means that as soon as the peacocks drink with their ears a few drops of the nectar coming from Krishna's distant flute, as soon as the peacocks drink with their ears a few drops of the nectar coming from Krishna's distant flute, they burst into wild dancing. Raise your hand if you've seen a peacock dance. They move their open tail feathers back and forth, making the sound like the rattling of a snake. Wildly dancing, and they step and step in their dance. And what do they causes them to dance? A few drops of the nectar of Govinda's flute. So that is what Venumapi Anu means, Sanatana Goswami says. But the words can be split differently to Venu Manu, the mantra chanted by the flute. It indicates that the sound of Krishna's flute has a mystic power. A mystic power to enchant the peacocks and make them dance in intoxication. A little lower. That powerful mantra produces various peculiar effects, not only in the peacocks but throughout all of Vrindavan. Remember, this is the vision. This is actually what Sanatana Goswami is seeing. The peacocks are the first to respond to that mantra, but its echoes reach even the peaks of the hills, which are attractive to everyone and are the source of the birth of the bamboo flute. And hearing this mantra, all the living beings standing on the peaks completely cease their activities. At the outset of the Govardhan Puja, as the multitude of offerings were being presented to feed Govardhan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead seated himself on Govardhan's peak, and he announced to everyone, "Sailo Asmi, I am this hill." The words of Ataranya Samasta Satvam means that all other creatures upon the hill, upon hearing the mantra, upon hearing Krishna's flute, they all became stunned. They could not move. But these words also applied to Vrindavan, in the sense that the lower material modes, passion and ignorance, cannot act there, and only the perfectly pure mode of Vishuddha Sattva prevails. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, even the trees and creepers in Vrindavan have attained the status of pure goodness. The trees and creepers in the forest are so luxuriant with fruits and flowers that they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. As their branches bend low with weight, the filaments on their trunks and vines stand erect in the ecstasy of their love of God. And both the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. Another verse. This one is spoken according to Raghunath Das Goswami by Srimati Radharani herself, glorifying Giriraj Govardhan. Of all the devotees, this Govardhan hill, everyone look, this Govardhan hill, of all the devotees, this Govardhan hill is the best. If any of us wish to become the best devotee or the biggest devotee, you're going to have to be bigger than Govardhan Hill. But Srimati Radharani has already reached her conclusion that Giriraj is the best. Oh, my friends, why? For Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, their cows, and their cowherd friends, for them, this hill supplies all necessities: caves, fruits, flowers, edible roots, water for drinking, and very soft grass. Paniya suyavasa kandara kandara mulai. In this way, the hill offers respects to the Lord. How does he offer respects to the Lord? Please listen again. Of all the devotees, this Govardhan Hill, you can look if you want to, is the best. Oh, my friends, for Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends, for them, this hill supplies all necessities: caves, fruits, flowers, edible roots, water for drinking, and very soft grass. In this way, the hill offers respects to the Lord. How? By serving the needs of the devotees, those who are serving Krishna. That is how Giriraj has become considered by none other than Srimati Radharani as Haridasa Vajra, the best of all the servants of Lord Hari. How has Giriraj attained this amazingly exalted status? And not only a service attitude, by serving in a very practical way. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram as they walk upon the hill. And this is Srimati Radharani speaking. She's not speaking about, of course she cannot say, being touched by all the gopis as well, but being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys and the cows. But she just mentions Krishna and Balaram, Rama, Krishna, Charana, Spadisha, Pramoda. Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. What does jubilant mean? So happy. Happy is here and jubilant is, we might say, ecstatic. Here is what Sanatana Goswami says about this verse. Parikshit Maharaj cites a verse in praise of Govardhan, spoken by another one of the gopis. This gopi addresses her girlfriends with the interjection, hanta, which expresses both joy and amazement. This hill Govardhan, she says, is certainly the best of all the servants of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord, who is named Hari, because what does Hari mean? Takes away not only problems, but takes away. What else does he take away? Of course, we want him to take away all our problems. And even Sanatana is saying he takes away everyone's sins. And not only that, everyone's miseries. Miseries and sins result in problems. And also, everyone's heart. Do we want Lord Hari to take away our heart? I thought so, yes. What would you like him to do with it?
Keep it forever.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't make any difference what you'd like him to do with it, because he's going to do with it what he wants. As evidence that Govardhan is the best of Krishna's devotees, and Sanatana Goswami has understood this very well, that Gaurahari has already taken his heart and he's doing with it just as he wants. And we're going to hear what he's going to do with it. Squeeze it. As evidence that Govardhan is the best of Krishna's devotees, this gopi mentions that from the touch of the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, just from the touch, he is displaying ecstasy. In what way? The grass growing on his body, looking just like bodily hair standing on end. The trees also look like that. And the water trickling down his sides looks just like perspiration, ecstatic. Furthermore, Govardhan performs elaborate worship not only of Krishna and Balaram, but also of their cows and cowherd friends. In addition to the cows, the word go indicates the other animals herded by Krishna. Did you know that Krishna also? Because go means he who wanders, and that's why go means the senses. The other animals too, the buffaloes, the goats, and others. The ganas are Krishna's companions, Balaram, Sridham, and the other cowherd boys. Govardhan worships them all with the things that give them special pleasure, including drinks, paneer like water, honey, and sugarcane juice. He also offers suyavasa, excellent grass, or taking su to mean various products like fruits and flowers. He offers such things along with fresh grass. In his caves, he provides beds and seats made of stones and lamps and mirrors made out of jewels. And he gives various roots and vegetables for Krishna and the boys to eat. Thus, he's the best of Krishna's devotees, because with loving devotion, he serves not only Krishna, but also Krishna's brother, his friends, and his cows. By saying this, and by calling the other gopis, the other girls, abhala, oh weak and feeble girls, the gopi speaking, who is Srimati Radharani, she is implying that she and the other gopis are less fortunate than Govardhan. Bewildered by their love for Krishna, they lack the strength to render such valuable services. Another way to understand the words Rama Krishna Charanas Parishara Pramoda is that Krishna's feet give happiness to the entire world. And always they enjoy many kinds of sports. Govardhan delights those two lotus feet whenever they touch the stones on his surface. That is a very peculiar expression, because Krishna's lotus feet, one of the reasons why Krishna's feet are compared to a lotus, because the lotus, the petal is so soft, and rocks are not known for their softness. They're pointy and sharp. But whenever Krishna's two lotus feet touch the stones on Giriraj's surface, those stones at once become soft, like newly churned butter. Now that is soft and very cool, or else slightly warm. Cool in which season? The summer season, and warm in the winter, but never hot. Or, taking yet another meaning of Rama and Charana, see what Sanatana Goswami is doing? He's taking this verse And like a pot of milk, he's churning it and churning it and churning it within the pot of his heart. And look what is coming out. So many wonderful descriptions. So many wonderful descriptions of Sri Vrindavan Dham, all related to Krishna, all related to serving Krishna, all related to serving Krishna with unlimited love. So much so that by the touch of Krishna's feet, Giriraj becomes ecstatic. And that ecstasy is manifest as?
Trees,
everything in ecstasy, standing on edge. And then this gopi laments, because we gopis cannot do what Giriraj does. We are condemned. We cannot serve Krishna. Thus, even though the gopis are full in all virtues, they consider themselves inadequate. Such is the natural dissatisfaction of persons on the highest level of pure love of God. We're getting a glimpse into Sanatana Goswami's heart. And through Sanatana Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching us how to have hearts like Sanatana, Rupa, and Srila Prabhupada. Very, very soft, very compassionate, Prabhupada once told Jagtrini Mataji and myself in Vrindavan, it is my desire to make everyone in the universe Krishna conscious. Now, that is a big-hearted desire. And then he said, please assist me. Not exactly in those words. Please, can you help me? So that desire of Prabhupada's is the desire that is sheltering all of us, that we have an opportunity to assist, to serve in such a wonderful, big-hearted mission. Practically speaking, to bring the whole world to Vrindavan. But not right here, while we're sitting here talking. It will become too crowded. When Prabhupada first left New York to go to Vrindavan in 1967, when he had ill health, he told the devotees, oh, you should all come to Vrindavan. They were the Westerners in New York. And he said, there you will find the atmosphere so sweet. There is no whoosh, whoosh, whoosh of motor cars. That was a long time ago. And then he turned to one of his disciples, Himavati, and said, the ladies there carry water pots on their heads. You can also learn that. So, how will Mahaprabhu instruct Sanatana Goswami? Who remembers something from yesterday's class? But raise your hand instead of just calling out. Who remembers? This is the most difficult question always. Who can remember something from yesterday? Raise your hand. Avram. Well, now, say it. Drida Bhakti. What does Drida Bhakti mean? Do you remember? When I think of the word Drida, it means firmly fixed. Strong, firm bhakti. Sanatan. Who was described as having that? Anupama. In Lord Ram. Or Drida Bhakti or Drida Chitte. His consciousness. Chitte means consciousness, heart, mind. It was firmly fixed in bhakti. Thank you. To Lord Ram. Who remembers something else? Raise your hands. Yes. But loudly.
Lord Chaitanya hugging Sanatan Goswami, who had cut sores all over him from the trip.
Yes. He was covered in oozing. The word oozing is used and mentioned many times, so we understand that there was this infectious pus coming out of his body. Infectious, contagious. And one of the devotees pointed out to me yesterday that Sanatan Goswami embraced Haridas, but actually it describes how Haridas embraced Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sanatan Goswami. It wasn't Sanatan Goswami who embraced Haridas. And we can imagine, although it's not said, we can imagine that Haridas was gently said, please, I have these sores on my body. Don't touch me. And there is no mention of Haridas embracing Sanatan again. But Mahaprabhu embraced Haridas by force. Even though Sanatan Goswami, he embraced Haridas also. But Sanatan Goswami by force. And Sanatan Goswami was moving away. Don't, you are my worshipable Lord. You are my worshipable Lord. How can I allow you to embrace me? Your transcendental body touching this. There is a tendency always to want to get closer and closer and closer and push other people out of the way to get closer and closer and closer to the hill, to the deities. But this tendency is not exactly the mood of Sanatan Goswami. Not the mood of Thakur Haridas. Haridas Thakur, when Nityananda Prabhu, oh, that was Raghunath Das Goswami, when Nityananda Prabhu was sitting in Panihati, he stayed far away and Nityananda saw him and said, only a thief stays so far away. Now we have caught you. And he brought him close. And you know what he did when he brought him close? He placed his lotus feet upon his head. The intimacy of the relationship between Sanatan Goswami and his Lord and Master, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the intimacy of the relationship between Master and Servant is described here, because this is the essential point of bhakti. It is one of masterhood and servitorship. And in Chaitanya Leela, in Krishna Leela, there are five rasas, four actually, beginning with Dasya Rasa, and then going to friendship, Sakya Rasa, and then parental relationship. But in Mahaprabhu's Leela, there is only one relationship all the devotees have with Mahaprabhu, and that's Dasya Rasa. It's servitorship. So everyone treats Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Lord, with great reverence. We'll continue here. It is very good, Mahaprabhu told Sanatan, that you have arrived here. Now stay in this room with... So he's given him a great benediction. And that is the sign, or a sign, of the Lord's special mercy upon someone. It is association. Now, continue. There's two more verses describing the words of Mahaprabhu before he leaves. Both of you, and please listen very carefully, both of you are expert. Who are the two both? What should they do in their association? Both of you are expert in understanding bhakti ras, the mellows of Lord Krishna's devotional service. You are expert in this, in relishing this. You have the proper consciousness. You are so advanced, both of you. And therefore, you should both continue relishing the taste for such activities. So relish bhakti ras and Krishna rasa asvadana. You taste this Krishna rasa, bhakti rasa, kare. You do this, laha Krishnanam, and you chant Krishna's names. Every aspect of devotional service, especially in Kali Yuga, must be accompanied by the chanting of Krishna's holy names. Now we shall speak about the holy names of Krishna and their importance somewhat today, and somewhat tomorrow, because it comes up naturally in the text. So here, the first mention, that you should relish bhakti rasa. This is the desire of Mahaprabhu. Relish it in the association of the devotees and chant Krishna's names. And having said this, and this is the first instruction that Mahaprabhu is giving to Sanatana Goswami. And having said this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got up and he left. And through Govinda, he sent prasad for them to eat. In this way, Sanatana Goswami stayed under the care of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The word for that is Prabhustani. I found this very, very sweet, because in this world, everyone is trained by the culture, and that training by the culture sits very well in our hearts. We are trained and we desire independence. And here is Sanatana Goswami, this exalted person, with Haridas Thakur, an exalted person, two most exalted persons. Sanatana Goswami was the prime minister of a country, practically speaking. And here he was, like a little boy, staying under the care and getting all his nourishment from Mother Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. E mata sanatana rahe prabhu stane jagannathera chakra deki karane pranami. And every day he would see the wheel, the chakra, on the top of the Jagannath temple. And in this way he would offer respectful obeisances from far to Lord Jagannath when he would see the chakra atop the temple, not pushing his... He was staying outside with Thakur Haridas and offering his respects, fully satisfied in that way. And how did Mahaprabhu reciprocate with the moods of these two great devotees? Prabhu Asi. How often? Pratidin. Every day Mahaprabhu would come, Milena Dvijana, to meet these two souls. They had attracted him. Prabhupada would repeat the words of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. Mahaprabhu was pulled to these two great souls every day. And what would he do when he got there? Ista Gosti, Krishna Kata, Kahi Kata Chane. Every day, at least for some time, about their worshipable Lord, it was Krishna, they would talk around and around the subject. They would speak Krishna Kata, Gramya Katana Sunibe, Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das. It was their taste. It was their taste. We all naturally, I don't know if you've noticed this, but we hear something like, oh yes, Mahaprabhu, Sanatana Goswami, Haridas Thakur, they would speak Krishna Katha. From now on, I shall only speak Krishna Katha. But when a fallen soul has a different taste for other things, he cannot avoid following its taste. We cannot avoid it. So we want to increase our taste for Krishna Katha. We want to increase our desire to be with Krishna in service. That taste we want to increase. And how does one increase a taste? By cultivation. Whatever we cultivate, whatever we put our attention on, our consciousness on, our taste for that will increase. Prabhupada was once asked, how can I become sincere? And Prabhupada replied, if you want to be a drunkard, just how will you increase your taste for that? Just associate with drunkards. And then he said, if you want to become sincere, associate with them. And he pointed to the devotees. And just imagine what it would be like if Prabhupada did that. If you want to become sincere, just associate. Yes, well, yes, just imagine if Prabhupada was pointing to you. Go, whoops. How do I get invisible right now? And so it goes through me and points to someone else. The finger points at us sometimes to come up to perhaps beyond what we are and to what we actually long to be. And I saw that when Prabhupada dealt with the devotees, he spoke to that part of them. He spoke to the sincerest part of them. He spoke about their compassion and their this and their that, because he wanted that part to grow. Now that is a good prayer to Giriraj. I have so many other parts, like weeds in a drought. Please let them die, and let this part, let it grow. And then I have to do my part. So every day, Mahaprabhu would meet with these devotees. The offerings of prasad in the temple of Lord Jagannath were divya prasad. They were divine, first class prasadam. And every day Mahaprabhu would bring that. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would bring this prasad and deliver it to both devotees. He was taking care of them in every way. But when he squeezes Sanatana Goswami, we should understand that is also his careful prasad. It is easier to see that when he's squeezing Sanatana Goswami than when he's squeezing me. That there's something in it for me to learn. Something very important. Okay. Now, the pastime will continue. One day, when the Lord came to meet them, he suddenly began speaking to Sanatana Goswami. Now, in the next verses, Kaviraj Goswami is going to describe the words of Sanatana Goswami. Sanatan, deha tyagi Krishna jadipaya. By giving up your body, deha tyagi, renouncing your body, because Sanatana Goswami was planning on committing suicide. Why? Because he could not find any way that he could please Krishna, that he could perform devotional service. And this was breaking him apart. What could one say other than that's complete sincerity? Sincerity is a way of describing Sanatana's pure love. His sincerity had grown to that platform, pure love, that he felt, if I don't have a service, if I cannot serve, I have nothing. And when one is more advanced, the specifics of the kind of service that he knows that he is meant to offer Krishna, his very nature. This is me. I am my service. There is not me and I do service, but I am that service, practically speaking. There is no... It is the offering of the soul. It is the offering of the self. This actually dictates our form. How we wish to serve dictates who we are. So Mahaprabhu says, my dear Sanatan, if I could attain Krishna by committing suicide, I would certainly give up millions of bodies without a moment's hesitation. Because what is this body after all? It must be given up. We like to maintain it. We identify with it as ourself. We love our body, the Atma Buddhi. We have that type of mentality. I am my body. But then we must die. Well, in actuality, we will live. Tata dehantara praptiya diras tatra. Diras tatra. So Mahaprabhu was saying, if that's what it took, if this was the process of bhakti, or rather, if this was the process of sadhana, I would do it a million times over in a moment. Because Mahaprabhu's mood was service, loving service, in separation, especially when he was in Puri. In separation from Krishna. See, Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, Nahi Anya. His body would become devastated. His limbs would retract into his body. And sometimes they would elongate. The hairs of his body would stand on end. Tears would pour like the Ganga from his eyes. His body would turn different colors. He would fall to the ground. He would jump up. What type of emotions were manifesting within him? It was love. Love in the mood of Srimati Radharani for Krishna. But this isn't the method, he said. You should know, this is text 56, Deha Tyagi Krishna Napai. You will not be able to get Krishna by giving up your body. Paye Bhajane. But you will get Krishna through bhajan, through service, through worship, through devotional worship, devotional service. Not just service, not just work, devotional service, through loving service, through acting to please Krishna according to the ways that Krishna is pleased. Krishna praptyeda upai. By devotional service, Krishna prapti, you will get the shelter of Krishna upai. Kona nahi bhakti vine. Bhakti vine, without bhakti, there is not another way that you could get Krishna. You get it through your bhajan, through your devotional service. And without bhakti, you cannot obtain Krishna. You follow the process properly if you want the proper result. I tend to want the result, but without following the process. And of course, I don't get the result, and I become frustrated. So we're meant to keep our mind to some degree on the result that we want. This is essential. Just like if I'm traveling in a car or an airplane from one place, or especially a car in this example, you want to put your mind on where you're going. You don't want to forget where you're trying to drive to, because you'll end up in a completely different direction. And when you're very close to that place, you won't be able to help yourself. You'll be thinking of where you're going. If you're driving from the Delhi airport to Vrindavan, by the time you reach very close to Vrindavan, past Koshi, then the sweetness of Vrindavan captivates the heart in such a wonderful way. And you just start breathing again. It's hard to remember what it was like until you get there, until you're sitting in Govardhan, at the feet of Govardhan. There's such a tendency to take it for granted even when you're here. That is the most special time, in one sense, when you get close, but not yet there. Because then the anticipation is the strongest. And actually, that stage where the anticipation is the strongest is on the sadhana level, is called a shakti. You know who you are in relationship to Krishna, but you're not there, and you become mad. And that is what attracts Krishna. The specifics of who you are in relationship to Krishna are even known, but you haven't achieved the shelter of the internal energy. And it drives you mad, because you don't want anything else. The attachment is so great. I want that, I want that, I want that. And then when Krishna desires, then he awards that shelter. The shelter of the internal energy. When we blossom into who we are, like a lotus blossoming into the full-grown lotus. Acts such as suicide are influenced by the mode of ignorance. And in ignorance and passion, one cannot understand who Krishna is. We can note that, by the way. Tamo Rajo Dame Krishna na Pai Mama. We will not, because of these lower modes, they disturb our minds so much, fill us with so many other desires, we cannot get Krishna. Bhakti Vina Krishna Kabu Nahi Premodai. Unless one discharges devotional service, one cannot awaken one's dormant love for Krishna. Premodai. Udai is the sun arising. Premodai, the sun of Krishna arising, of prema, of love for Krishna arising in the heart. Bhakti Vina, without that, at any time, one, the love for Krishna without bhakti, intense bhakti. Intense bhakti. Not, what is the opposite of intense bhakti? What words in English are sort of the opposite of intense? Relaxed, lax, dissipated, superficial, lukewarm. Unless one discharges devotional service, one cannot awaken one's dormant love for Krishna. And listen to this. And there is no means to attain him other than awakening that dormant love. So that when we have love for Krishna, then Krishna is obtained. He allows himself to be obtained. He gives himself to his devotee. He can't help it because he's bhakta vatsalya, atma parjanta vadanyata. This is the quality of Krishna that really makes him the most worshipable, lovable, supreme Bhagawan, and that stops us from conceiving of him or understanding him as like a dictator or something that, you know, unless you love God, unless you love me, you're not going to be happy and you're going to suffer. And you're going to try to do some, I'm setting up the laws here. And unless you love me, you can, even though you may have so many other tendencies due to my material energy, unless you love me, you're not going to be happy. It sounds like God has some kind of a problem. But it's not like that. He's not like that. Because by the love of his devotees that he wants to them to awaken to, which is the natural condition, the natural constitutional consciousness of every soul, his natural longing, that Krishna becomes controlled by that love. You come to me and I will become controlled. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who's saying, Sarvadamam Prityaja, Mame Kam Saranam Braja. You come to me and I will serve you. This is my pleasure. How does that Supreme Lord get his pleasure? The all-powerful controller. How does he get his pleasure? By listening to all the requests of everyone who go to the churches and the temples and the etc. Please do this and please, I'm suffering so much and please give me this and please give me that and on and on and on and on. That's all our pleasure. But where does he get his pleasure? What is the pleasure of Krishna, who, after all, is the reservoir of all pleasure? He is the source of all pleasure, and where does the source of all pleasure manifest his pleasure from? or how does he get it? It's quite astounding. It's like the king, the common citizens, their only understanding of the king, because they don't get to see him, they don't get to meet him, talk with him. Their only understanding of the king, practically speaking, is the manifestation of the king that everyone gets is the government. The energy of the king is the government. And they see his power. And they don't dare break the government's power because the consequences will come upon them heavily. And then there's a few people, numerically few, who get to see the king in his court, the Dabar, where, if you've ever been to the Red Fort, is a very tall seat that he sat on. And you look at him like this, the king like this. This is important, because after all, he's a man, a person. But you can't think of him as an ordinary person, because if you don't think of him as the king, you won't listen to him. And it's for your own good that you see him like this, because then you'll listen to him and you won't go afoul of the government, the rules and regulations, and you'll live a happy, peaceful life. And there are the king's attendants who are on either side of the king, and they have to treat him with great awe and reverence. But all day long he's solving everyone's problems and this and that and ordering this and ordering that. When he can retire to his private quarters, where very, very few can actually see him, take off his crown and put it on a nail and just hang it there. Why can he take off his crown and put it on a nail and hang it there? If you had a crown full of jewels and you took it and put it on a nail and hung it over there and came back in 10 minutes, you'd see some rickshawwala walking down, you know, with a crown on his head, saying, "Panch rupee, one crown." Anywhere, not just here. But he can do that in his own quarters and relax and joke with his family members and play with his son, his young son, because those people are the most trusted because of the depth of their love for him. And he can just have fun in any way that he likes. And that is Vrindavan. Krishna doing just what he likes for his pleasure with his most infinite, his most intimate and confidential lovers who love him in a specific mood, the mood of the Brajbasis. And he can just relax and enjoy himself to his fullest extent. And how does he enjoy himself? We can read this. We can hear about it. We can hear about these incredible dealings between Krishna and his devotees, most intimate devotees, most intimate, trusted, loving devotees, whose forms are practically speaking manifestations of their loving, serving mood, their bhajan, their bhakti, which is meant to simply give Krishna pleasure. But it's so difficult to understand what is going on in Braja, because this world is a reflection of that world. And therefore, when we see or hear that world, we think it is just like this world, but it has nothing to do with this world in the sense that the reflection doesn't really contain any of the substance. Yes, there's some form that the reality of the real tree has that you see also in the reflection, but it doesn't have substance. This world doesn't have the substance of Golok Vrindavan. And what is the substance that it doesn't have? It doesn't have a trace of love. It is all based in the reflective world here on lust. Atma Endriya Priti. It is selfishness. So therefore, Krishna's lila is so difficult to understand because it reminds us, it triggers in us the memories that we have of the selfishness of this world. Once I was in Bangladesh and a Hindu convert to another religion said, "How could you worship a god that dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night?" He actually said that to me. But you should just keep away from that. You don't have access to that. How could you worship a god who is limited in any way? But it is not like this world. So therefore, by awakening love for Krishna, by awakening this type, this premodaya, then as the residents of Vrindavan have, Krishna becomes completely captivated by them, and he's Bhaktivatsalya. His pleasure, as he displays his full personality, is serving his devotees and increasing their ecstasy in unlimited ways. So there is no means to attain him other than awakening that dormant love. And then Mahaprabhu quotes to Sanatana Goswami a verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. "My dear Uddhav, neither through Astanga Yoga nasadyate mam yogo." If one wants to attain Krishna, vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajnanam adayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti sabyate. There is one absolute truth, but how to understand Krishna? How to gain access to Goloka Vrindavan? Nasadyate never causes to remain satisfied. Nasadyate. You won't, and then to the last line, yata bhaktir mamorjitaha. You won't be able to satisfy Krishna, because this is the point, that it is Krishna who we must satisfy to get him by his causeless mercy to reveal himself to us completely in his palace, in his private quarters, in Vrindavan, as he's playing with the gopis, as he's engaging in dancing with the gopis in the middle of the night, and they are married. He won't reveal these most intimate pastimes, exchanges that are free from any tinges of this world. They are composed of Ladini Shakti, Krishna's ecstatic spiritual potency, his Chit Shakti, his spiritual knowledge potency, Sambit. These pastimes are going on a completely different level. Yes, he's dancing with them. He's kissing They are kissing. Their hearts are burning with love. But it is not the love of this world, which isn't actually love. Because soon as my satisfaction is not met, I withdraw from that relationship. It is the most natural thing for a conditioned soul from an amoeba to Brahma and everyone in between. When there is pain, we withdraw. And when there is pleasure, we move forward. And this is what this life is. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. It is moving closer when there is pleasure. I want icha. And pulling back when there is dvesha, aversion. And this is the duality that binds and bewilders every conditioned soul here. And it takes up his whole life. Moving forward, moving back, trying to rearrange the universe so that I finally can find what I am so desperately, my heart is so desperately thirsting for. But it has nothing to do on a particular level with me at all. It has to do with me in the sense as we conceive ourselves controlled by Maya. As we have a self-conception of ourselves controlled by Maya as separate from Krishna. And then, even, it doesn't have anything to do with that, and it doesn't have anything to do with when that bodily conception is broken, and I even understand that I am eternal. That I'm spiritual in nature, and I don't have anything to do with this icha dvesha, with the dualities of this world. What goes on in Vrindavan doesn't have anything to do with that, because that realization, when we focus only on that, I am a soul, and I can withdraw my consciousness into my spiritual nature. And I can leave the misery of this world, which is very real. Oh, so real. I'm so tired of the pain of this world. I withdraw my consciousness into my essential nature and just place my consciousness free from all duality in that unlimited peacefulness. This is the subject matter of this verse. Who we are ultimately doesn't have anything to do with that either. Because that, in removing the sense of self, removes not only the sense of limited self, to focus on the unlimited aspect of me, but it removes my full identity, the other half, that I am Krishna's forever. I am his part, unbreakably, forever. I am his servant, eternally, forever. I belong to him. It's like nowadays when someone, especially as Sachin Anandamaraj, as he's learning the intricacies of the American culture, and he likes to say the funny Americanisms, but in the United States, when people introduce themselves, or they tend in this way to be informal, they say, how are you doing? My name is... And they tell you their first name. First name. First name only. My name is Warren. My name is Bill. My name is this. My name is that. But that's only part of who I am, actually. first name and then last name in the West is your family name. You, first name, in relationship to family. In old Indian culture, now this part is losing itself a little bit, but the people's names, when a man would recite his name, the second part of his name would be the name of his father. And therefore, you had the honor not of your father to uphold when you acted, when you introduced yourself to someone. So you are going to be very careful, because it wasn't just you, Warren, but in relationship to your father who brought you into this world, who nurtured you. So similarly, conceiving of ourself with even as spirit, as soul, without our relationship with Krishna is incomplete. And not only is it incomplete, it is also, amazingly enough, and in its own inconceivable spiritual way, it is painful to Krishna. It is offensive. Because it is turning my back on my relationship with him. So therefore, Mahaprabhu says, my dear Uddhav, neither through Ashtanga Yoga, the ascending practices of Yam Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, and onward to Pratyahara, removing the senses from the objects to Dharan, Dhyan, and Samadhi, of fully absorbing our consciousness in the Lord, nor through impersonal monism, nor through Sankhya, Swadhyaya, Tyag, Sankhyam, Dharma, Yoga. Through none of these processes does one please Krishna. Enough for him to reveal himself in his most intimate aspect of Krishna in Vrindavan, and therefore pull that soul into relationship with him, and take that tiny soul who is infinitesimal in size and enlarge his bliss beyond Krishna's own bliss. And this, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching, that the soul has a capacity for bliss. Like the drop has the qualities of the ocean. But one cannot say that the ocean is equal in quantity to the drop. And one cannot say that the bliss of the ocean is equal to the bliss of capacity of the drop. So what Krishna does, as described in Braja, in the Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, in dealing with the Brijbasis, and especially the Brajagopis, the Brajagopikas, whose bhakti, whose love for him is complete and infinite and full, he enlarges their capacity for ecstasy beyond his own capacity for ecstasy. So therefore, Kaviraj Goswami later on, or earlier, he has said, those who think that the lover and the beloved enjoy equally, as quoted by Bharat Muni, the great Acharya for Natak Shastra, for explaining the rasa and the Natak level, The people who think that it's equal, how I enjoy the pleasure I get, Krishna himself is saying this, with the gopis, they do not understand my braja. They do not understand the ecstasies of the braja gopikas and all the other residents of Vrindavan in relationship to me that they're experiencing. This is the mystery of Vrindavan in a philosophical way. So therefore, Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami, this Deha Tyaga, you will not attain Krishna. He's using, and this will come out soon, he's using Sanatan to teach us. He's making him dance as a sadaka. He's making him dance like a puppet, karputli, putunach in Bangla, a dancing doll. For his purposes, which is really our purpose, so we can be taught. So therefore, he says, my dear Uddhav, neither through Astanga Yoga, nor through impersonal monism or analytical study of the Absolute Truth, nor through the study of the Vedas, nor through austerities, charity, or acceptance of sannyas, can one satisfy me as much as by developing unalloyed devotion, devotional service unto me. Measures like suicide are causes for sin. A devotee never achieves shelter at Krishna's lotus feet by such actions. And then, I'll read the next verse. Because of feelings of separation from Krishna, an exalted devotee's prema bhakti viyogi, one who has developed his prema for Krishna. And prema is developed on different levels to increasingly ecstatic positions. Because of feeling premi bhakti viyogi chahi deha chadite, that he, an ecstatic prema bhakti, when he separate from Krishna, when he's in viyog, not meeting Krishna, but separate from Krishna, he may feel that his life is so worthless and useless, I cannot be with Krishna, that I don't even, there's no meaning to my life. It's better that I didn't live, that I was dead, that I killed myself. But preme Krishna mele sehi na parema. He cannot give up his life. He cannot give up his life. He may feel in that way, in an ecstasy that is inconceivable to us, perhaps. But he cannot. Why can't he? Why did the Braja Gopikas and Nanda and Yasoda and the cowherd boys, when Krishna left Vrindavan, they appeared to wither? When Uddhava comes to Vrindavan, as described in the 46th chapter of the 10th canto, first he's given a glimpse of Braja without separation of Krishna. By the power of Yogama, he sees everything in blossom and bloom. Uppercut Vrindavan, spiritually manifest Vrindavan, that is eternally present. He's given a glimpse of that, and it's the most ecstatic, wonderful, blossoming, happy. Everyone is just in ecstasy, and then that vision is withdrawn because he's entering just after Krishna has left Vrindavan. And it is all withered. And there is not a drop of happiness apparently. But everyone is experiencing the ecstasy of separation from Krishna, Varaha Bhav. And in that ecstasy, their gain in separation from Krishna, They're gaining access and meeting Krishna in Varaha, in the upper cut level. Unless one is missing Krishna, one cannot feel separation. And if one doesn't feel separation, one cannot be with Krishna. So, the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna leaves on the chariot driven by Akura, the Braja Gopis' mood is described, and their life leaves with Krishna, but one thing keeps them alive. Through a messenger, Krishna sends a few words saying, basically, I'm coming. Asye. I'm coming. I'm returning. And that hope that Krishna is soon to return keeps them alive. This is love in Vrindavan. And also they were thinking that if Krishna hears that due to his departure we have all died, that will cause him pain. And that is the last thing we want to do, is cause Krishna pain, unhappiness. To save Krishna from a drop of perspiration due to excess work, Mother Yasoda is ready to give up her life millions of times, thousands, millions of times, unlimited times. This is love. This is Vrindavan. This is not seen in this world. And this is the cause of the unlimited sweetness of Vrindavan, because it is filled with this kind of love, the touch of Vrindavan, of the touch of the feet of the residents of Vrindavan on this very earth. Krishna walked here. The cows walked here by Govardhan Hill. The cowherd boys, the cowherd girls, every day they would walk here and touch this earth with their lotus feet. Mahaprabhu walked around Vrindavan. The Goswamis came here. They lived here. They walked here. Prabhupada's practically his final desire was to come to Govardhan, to Kiriraj. This is Vrindavan. This is the land of Yogamaya. The land of Brindadevi. So one who is deep, so that is the sweetness of Braja. It is enriched with the sweetness of love. But not love of this world, but real love. One who is deeply in love with Krishna cannot tolerate separation from the Lord, and therefore such a devotee always desires his own death. In other words, what is my life if I'm not with Krishna? If I can't serve Krishna, what is my life? It is useless. It is valueless. And then, Mahaprabhu, he quotes two verses to Sanatana Goswami to show that devotees do desire to give up their life, but they never give up their life. On these are the Prema Bhaktis. And one is by Rukmini Devi. And this is especially interesting because Rukmini Devi, she fell in love with Krishna. And then this most beautiful Supreme Lakshmi, the most beautiful young maiden, princess, was promised to Krishna's enemy. And this for her, she could not do this because her heart was fully given to Krishna. So she wrote a letter to Krishna and told Krishna, I've given my heart to you and you are like a lion. And if that which is meant to be enjoyed by the lion is going to be taken away by a jackal, I would rather die. And this is the last word of her, the last verse in her letter. O lotus-eyed one, great personalities like Lord Shiva desire to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet to drive away avidya, ignorance. If I do not get the mercy of your lordship, if you will not come and take me away and rescue me, this is Purvara, before meeting Krishna even. If I cannot have your association and be with you, if you will not kidnap me and marry me, I shall observe vows to reduce the duration of my life, and thus I shall give up bodies for hundreds of births if it is possible to get your mercy in that way. This is what Mahaprabhu said. But this I found so especially interesting because this is Purvarag, this is Rukmini speaking. And she had never seen Krishna, but she developed this love by hearing about Krishna. And this is the basic, most essential process that's given. She heard from Krishna, from Narada Muni, about Krishna from Narada Muni. And then the next verse, the gopis. This is from the 29th chapter of the 10th canto, where Krishna had called the gopis. And in many ways, there are similarities, let me say, how Krishna is treating the gopis at this point and how Krishna is treating Sanatana Goswami, Mahaprabhu will treat Sanatana Goswami, but I'll talk a little about that later. So Krishna calls them. They were the most pious, religious ladies. And it is compared, the religiousness was compared to the banks of a river. And the river is controlled by its banks. So the gopis could not come to Krishna. They loved him so dearly, so deeply. They wanted to be with Krishna. But their morality, their piety controlled them like the banks of a river control the flow of the river. So Krishna wanted to be with them. So he thought, their piety, their sense of dharma is so strong. And they are married to others, or they are young girls under the protection of their parents. They are shy. How can I get them to break the restraints of the riverbank of their own dharma, of their own religiosity and piety? And Krishna thought, there is only one way. I will use my ultimate weapon. And he took out his flute. And he began to play his flute. He called the gopis. He called the gopis. Each one by their own name. As he played the flute, as the Adha Amrita, the nectar of his lips, entered the holes of the flute and came out and went into the heart of each and every gopi and pulled them out of their homes and pulled them to the Vrindavan forest in the middle of the night, pulled them by the power of their love for him and his love for them, pulled by the sound of the flute. And then when they got there, Krishna said, very nice. You have seen the beauty of the Vrindavan forest on a full moon night. And now you can go home. Their hearts, they were pulled out completely. This part of the response of the gopis to Krishna's moral teachings, which Prabhupada very carefully and makes sure we understand in the Krishna book, says that these are very important teachings, that we understand these things. It's not that they should be disregarded, morality, because this is going on a completely different level. The gopis' response to Krishna's moral teachings, where they had just given up everything for Krishna, they had no choice due to the pull of the flute, is called the Pranaya Gita. Pranaya means the stage of prema, where the boiling of prema has gone past, where there is no more shyness. Because Krishna wanted to hear the love in their heart, and he wanted to hear their desires, their Krishnendriya Priti, their desires in loving service, which appear exactly like the reflection that we are very familiar with in this world, like lust, like the dealings between young boys and young girls. But Krishna wanted to hear of this most pure, loving desire that was in their hearts. So he played his flute, he called them, and then he sent them home. And their love raised pranaya, and all their shyness went. And then, because their shyness also goes, in case you haven't noticed, when there is, it's based on anger. Did you ever notice that? All the things that you're shyly hiding in your heart when you're angry, they're gone. So above man is pranaya. When no shyness is there, in man there's hiding and just pouting anger. All on this incredibly, inconceivably conceivable platform of prema. And in pranaya, this is what they said to Krishna. And Mahaprabhu is quoting this to show that, yes, one wants to give up one's life, but one never will give up one's life if one cannot be with Krishna, because Krishna has just sent the gopis home. So they said, the gopis said, "Oh dear Krishna, by your smiling glances and your melodious talk, you have awakened a fire of lusty desires in our heart. And now, this fire, by the action of your flute, is burning. It's burning so brightly, we want to be with you." Again, this doesn't have anything to do with the material world. But how can we conceive of something that doesn't have anything to do with everything, all that we know? If I say don't think about monkeys, to not think about monkeys, you have to first think about monkeys, because that's the negation of the concept. You have to think of the monkey before you can try to kick the monkey out of your mind, despite all the bananas in the mind. And therefore the monkey doesn't leave, because we are all basically mentally bananas. That's in American slang. This means a little bit karab. Karab. Yes? A little bit. Everyone knows what this means. So we can't not think about what it reminds us of, but we have to not think about it, because it has nothing to do with it It has nothing to do with the dealings between young boys and young girls or anything in Vrindavan. It doesn't have anything to do with this material world at all, except that this world is a reflection of that pure world. But this is what they're saying. It is pranaya love. Oh dear Krishna, your smiling glances and melodious talk, with these, you have awakened a fire of lusty desires in our heart. And now you should extinguish that fire with a stream of nectar from your lips by kissing us. With your talking, you've created this fire, your sweet smiling, and now, with the same instrument that you've created the fire with, your lips, Adha Amrita, with the nectar of your lips, you should extinguish that fire. Kindly do this. And if you don't, otherwise, dear friend, the fire within our hearts will burn our bodies to ashes because of separation from you. Thus, by meditation, just by the meditation of our love, which is enriched to this point, to this unlimited point of Braja Gopi Bhakti, past the stage of prem, past the stage of man, high, moving higher to pranaya. No shyness. We're telling you just what's in our heart now. And if you don't satisfy us, this fire is going to burn our bodies to ashes. And while it's burning, we will be meditating on you, claiming shelter, the shelter of your lotus feet. So Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana, don't commit suicide. You can't. Give up all your nonsensical desires, for they are unfavorable for getting shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Engage yourself, Shravana Kirtanam, hearing and chanting, and then you will soon achieve the shelter of Krishna. Achirat Pabe, you will be able to get Tabe Krishnera Charan. You will achieve the lotus feet of Krishna. The gopis, they're saying their desire to claim shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, you will achieve that same shelter by chanting and hearing about Krishna. Soon. So don't give it up. And then he explains another verse. On a different level, because Sanatana was saying, I cannot enter the temple due to my Nicha Jati, my low contaminated birth. And then in text 68, quoting from 799, 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, Mahaprabhu says that these aren't the qualifications. It doesn't have anything to do with your birth. It doesn't have anything to do with anything other than your bhakti. So in one sense, that can be very encouraging news, or it can be very discouraging news if we say that our bhakti is practically non-existent. I'll just... I'll end very soon. I'll read the next two verses, then we'll speak about them tomorrow, because we're supposed to actually read more, but speak about the holy names anyway. But please listen very carefully to these two verses. We won't speak about them, but listen. Bhajaneda madhya shrestha navavida bhakti Krishna prema Krishna dite dhari mahashakti. Among the ways of executing devotional service, the nine prescribed methods are the best. For these methods have great potency to deliver Krishna, and Krishna prema, ecstatic love for him. Tara madhye sarva shrestha, of all these nine methods, Nama Sankirtan, Niraparadi, chanting Krishna's names without offense, Paya, will give the greatest treasure, the most valuable treasure, the only treasure of prema. Chanting Krishna's names without offense. And this is the essential point that Srila Prabhupada based that and others, but it is all based on chanting Krishna's names. This is what will carry us, plus so much mercy and other things too, but this is the essential foundational principle upon which this society is based, that will bring us to the platform of prema bhakti. It is chanting Krishna's names. One very easily will obtain the most valuable love of God if one chants Krishna's holy names, avoiding the offenses. So Sanatana Goswami was chastised, although he didn't say anything about his desire to commit suicide. But Mahaprabhu said, don't do this. There is another process to gain shelter of Krishna's lotus feet and prema. Chant Krishna's names without offenses. So I'll stop here. Yesterday we heard a tape. I talked too much. We can't hear Prabhupada's words now. And yesterday we gave an assignment that everyone tried to do a little devotional service or a good deed for someone. And today there's another assignment. See if you can go 24 hours without offending anyone or hurting anyone's feelings or being nasty to someone. Most difficult thing. I've had this personal experience that there was one year in Kartik many years ago, and I've mentioned this before, when one devotee said, instead of taking a usual Kartik vrata of giving up sweets or reading a little bit more or chanting, why don't you take an interesting one and vow not to criticize any devotees? And I said, oh, what a wonderful idea. I will make that my Kartik vrata, and I shall not criticize any devotees during the month of Kartik. Jai Prabhu! And I lasted not even one day. You're laughing, but I wasn't laughing at all. What happened was, it like shined a torch on this particular offense on my consciousness. And rather than being able to stop doing it, criticizing devotees mentally, speaking, talking, blah, 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 I became painfully aware of how much I do it. So that was my problem. But certainly you all don't have that problem, so you can carry out that I didn't last 24 hours, and at the end of 3 days I gave up my kartik vrata because I just couldn't do it. I couldn't even come close. So for one day, try this. Don't criticize anyone. Make it really simple. Don't say anything nasty about anyone. If you want to really get into it, don't think anything critical about anyone. Have fun. Gaur Bhaktivinoda, Giriraj Bhaktivinoda.